Why would we not start this podcast talking about Chuck Norris?
Well, Delta Force 2 in particular. Oh. By that time, they were in their flow in terms of the Chuck Norris.
It was 1990.
Style. Yeah. Okay.
So Chuck Norris was 65 years old.
No, now he's
like 310.
And still going strong.
Yes, he is.
Hell yeah.
Did you know that you can get a Chuck Norris commemorative silver coin?
Really?
Yeah, they're like $175.
I'm not paying that much for Chuck Norris commemorative.
I know. I think I mentioned this to you before, but a while back I was going to get us each one for Christmas until I saw the price tag and went, fucking no, I'm not even getting one for me.
Yeah.
No, two.
I mean, if it was something like a joke thing and they were maybe, you know, $1.25 or something like that.
I might go
$5 at the most.
Yeah.
But the design would have to be super cool. Yeah, exactly. Shipping included. Yeah.
So, I also was looking at, like, the official website to buy a brand spanking new one. I'm sure we could get one for cheaper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, eBay.
I mean, I was looking at buying it directly from Chuck Norris. Because, you know, we're tight like that. So.
Well, you need, I mean, if you're going to get something like that, you kind of want to get it direct from the source. I mean, it makes perfect sense that you check out the website. It's just too bad that, because here's the other thing.
Yeah,
you
know,
Chuck.
I don't want to be buying one of those bootleg black market Chuck Norris silver coins.
Hey, okay. So maybe he makes no money whatsoever on the bootleg black market coins. I grant you that. But for one of these coins where they're charging $125 or whatever the fuck, guarantee you Chuck's making $20 at best off that deal. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. He probably has forgotten that he signed that deal.
Yeah, exactly.
It was something his lawyer approached him with one day while he was eating breakfast.
And yeah. Went, yeah, sure, Chuck, whatever. Just sign this. Just sign this, okay? You'll get some money. Trust me.
Well, I'm sure he has somebody who's just power of attorney. Like, no, just do my business stuff for me. If you think it's a good idea, just...
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rubber stamp that motherfucker. Who cares?
Well, this is a guy who basically had... what, a good 15, 20 years in the entertainment industry where he went from being, like, maybe not an A-lister, but a strong
well,
B.
Okay, but and he, then was kind TV of a, series. He was kind of an instant legend because he fought Bruce Lee in the fucking Coliseum.
Well, yeah, and he was a legit martial artist. I mean, championship belts, all of that sort of stuff. And
let's not forget the time he saved Florida from those invaders.
From Mars?
No, the
I'm just kidding.
Yes, anyway.
But the Octagon, I mean, the guy and his martial arts films, they just blended at the perfect time to represent, like, it was right before all of the really heavy-hitting, big, amped-up steroid guys came in. You know, there was, like, this little pocket where he was able to be our American martial artist badass, you know? And he lived it up to the fullest, so I'm sure he had a full fortune. So when it came time to sign off on whatever the fuck the next big thing was, he was just like, is the percentage good? Okay, fine, we'll take that, you know? So these commemorative coins, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere along the way he was told the money was good, but he's still losing his shirt on the fucking deal.
Yeah, and has no idea.
And has no idea. Exactly. Exactly.
If you brought one of those to him, he would be shocked.
He'd be like, oh, this is really cool. Wow, what is this?
That's me.
I got it off your website, Chuck. Oh, fantastic.
Always nice to meet a fan. Handshake. Goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. And then $20 for my signature on a headshot.
Yes.
You know, that sort of thing. Although, these days, he's probably going for, you know, $35 or maybe even $50. Who knows?
We should contact him and see how much it'll get to...
I'm not that
interested.
How
much it'll take just to hang out with Chuck Norris. No, I don't want to hang out with Chuck Norris. No, God, no.
No.
Sounds like a bad time.
Well, you know, what I would do is one of those meet and greets that they do every once in a while where you'll get a whole bunch of celebrities from random movies or TV series or whatever the fuck, and they're all like in this room and they're there to rub elbows with the fans who remember who the fuck they are and actually want to meet them in person and maybe buy a headshot or get, you know, an autograph signature on something like that, you know.
Chuck Norris and Jason Priestley.
Exactly. Exactly. I met, oh, man, of course I'm going to fucking forget his name. Michael Pere from Eddie and the Cruisers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I loved that guy. Was able to meet him in person at one of these meet and greets. Same meet and greet where I met Rob Van Dam, as a matter of fact. And also Anne Montgomery and so many lovely people from the 80s. You remember that kid from the Babysitter movie who shoots the plate and goes, "The dishes are done, dude." Saw that guy about 20 years later. Very odd looking guy as an adult. Anyway.
Yeah. So, welcome to HPB. I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And, woo.
Yeah, that was a tangent.
Yeah, we, did we break our rules today, Brad?
No. Well, yes. But, today not
was
really.
It was very serendipitous, actually, how this happened.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about Eastern Promises.
Yes. The David Cronenberg-directed movie with Viggo Mortensen. 2007 it came out.
I believe, yes.
Viggo was nominated. I just looked it up on IMDb because I wanted to see what the nominations were. And apparently, the only nomination for the movie was Viggo for Best Actor. Well-deserved. Didn't win. But it was also the year that it was up against No Country for Old Men, which was the Coen Brothers movie.
Good movie, though. It's not like it lost to nothing. I like No Country for Old Men.
Hate that fucking movie.
Of course you do,
it's
Brad.
It's so dumb. The plot holes that are in there. And apparently, it's very close to the novel. So the guy who wrote the novel is an asshole. Yes, I'm saying that officially because the whole end of the book is still sort of ambiguous, just like the movie is. But apparently the clues are there if you want to study the minutiae of the individual scenes to try and deduce whatever the fuck the writer meant for this character and how the end of his story should have been. But, yeah, I hated No Country for Old Men. I thought it was far, far too overrated for the script, material content, the character structure. I thought Eastern Promises was far superior, not only in script structure and simply presentation of story, but Viggo as the actor lead in this movie. Holy shit.
He is really goddamn good.
You take what's-his-fuck the old sheriff and the assassin in No Country for Old Men, both of those characters completely snore, boring, don't care, don't believe. But Viggo in Eastern Promises, holy shit, I buy him 100%. He's fucking terrifying, and somehow he's the hero in this story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to talk about subverting expectations or flipping scripts or all of this sort of stuff. You know, by the way, there's definitely spoilers all the way through this, just as in every other movie that we do, because we just, there's no way to get into how brilliant the structure of this script is without having to give up a couple of things.
This is not going to be a real broad strokes. Like, there are very specific things in this that are just mind-blowingly good storytelling and visual storytelling, which is why when I asked you, like, is this movie too good? It's because I've been on kind of a Cronenberg kick.
Okay, okay.
And I was looking up his movies that I could find, and this was on here. I was like, oh, that's right. I forgot David Cronenberg, like, made actual movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, he's David fucking Cronenberg, dude. The Fly, Videodrome.
Oh, dude, he
Existens.
Yeah. The, what is it? The, filmography of his career is fascinating because he always deals with complexity of emotion, complexity of human dynamics. So even if you're dealing with some of his more, let's say, extreme or extroverted types of horror movies or investigations into like body trauma and things like that that are in some of his individual movies, you always have these explorations of what does this mean in terms of trying to pursue some sort of perceived existence. Like, is it a better existence to really be doing what you're doing, mm-hmm. whether you're doing this to your body or whether you're acting outwardly in some sort of a way, like with Eastern Promises, with Vigo's character. He's introduced, what is he doing when we first meet him, Chris?
I believe the first time we meet him, he is taking apart a body.
Yes. Uh-huh. And very joking calm. About it. Yeah. Yeah. And in some detail.
Yes.
And the scene ends up where this body was someone who was saying some bad things about the son of the head of the whole Russian mafia in that area.
That is how we're introduced to the film, is this guy's getting a haircut mm-hmm. at a Turkish barber, and his nephew walks in, you know, Uncle Azim,
mm-hmm.
and he basically has his, like, 16-year-old nephew slit this fucking Russian gangster's throat.
As a rite of passage sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the Russian gangster, what's interesting about the scene is the way that it's written and the way that it's performed, the Russian gangster doesn't realize it's a full-on setup until maybe the last two or three sentences are until spoken. Until he says,
take this razor blade and kill this fucking Rusky.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, yeah. So, and the guy jumps right out away, of the seat.
Yeah, but right away, we get the real, like, oh, this is still Cronenberg with the throat slit, because he shows it full on.
Yeah, well, he shows Vigo cutting the fingers.
And practically. He does all of this shit practically, because that's Cronenberg.
Yeah, exactly. Another fucking reason to respect this guy, respect what he does, because even that throat cut now, and as I think about it, there are two different throat cuts that are done in the movie, mm-hmm. you know? But even that throat cut...
The other one is the nephew.
Yeah, when he gets assassinated. Yeah. So it's that whole sort of poetic justice kind of thing. But when you see it done, nowadays if they would do it, I completely believe that the razor would simply be like a stick for reference. And then everything else would just be CG'd in, you know, the line on the throat, the blood coming out, all of that sort of stuff would just be some sort of CG composited horseshit, you know. And once again, this is why I prefer that we do these older movies, because we see practical effects but done well.
Thing, is this isn't even an older movie. This is in the age where
2007, CG 2008. Ruled. Yeah,
it's because you have the old school director that's like, no, I'll just do it.
Yeah. Here is and if you're already by this time. And if
you're the studio, who else are you going to trust but David Cronenberg? Like, yeah, I believe he can give us a very good throat slit practically.
Well, already by this time, he had done enough of the body trauma stuff. Like that movie where Jeremy Irons plays the twin of himself.
Dead Ringers.
A fucking great movie, dude. But you want to talk about bizarre practical effects in a movie. Yeah. That's one. Existence.
Yeah.
That one has some great practical effects that you're just like, what were you on, David? Yeah,
What the fuck is this?
You know?
And that's the thing is, Cronenberg is known for when you know you're going to see a David Cronenberg movie, buckle the fuck in.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see some shit that you're not going to forget.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it since the 70s.
Well, yeah. And once again, I'd like to reinforce, it's not simply horror that he presents to you. It is an emotional human experience where you go through what these characters feel as they're introduced, as they're exposed, they get indulgent with this thing, and whatever the repercussions may be from that indulgence, that slip into the deep end on the world that he introduces. So, I mean, once again, Eastern Promises is consistent in terms of being a Cronenberg movie in mm-hmm. that way, because we see desperate circumstances from the start that are made clear without any hallucinations or body trauma or thing like that. I mean, real body trauma, you know what I mean. Yeah. Like with Crash. We're not talking about Crash.
Yeah.
But we are seeing stuff in here that takes you, challenges you emotionally in terms of what is the correct moral, ethical thing to do here.
Because the first two images we're shown again is the nephew who we find out is slow.
Yeah.
In mm-hmm. some way, it's never explained. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
The next image we see is a 14-year-old girl covered in track marks, bleeding out of her crotch, slipping right. in a pharmacy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she walks into a pharmacy asking for help. It's mistaken that she's there for methadone, like maybe she's a heroin junkie because she's been shot up on heroin by these mobsters who have kidnapped her. She's, for whatever reason, was able to get away enough to get to this pharmacy. She passes out there. She's been bleeding. She's clearly injured. She gets taken to a hospital. And they recognize, essentially, that they can save the baby, but not the mom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they do. And this is where we meet our other lead, Naomi Watts. Well, actually, we meet her before we meet Vigo, don't we?
Yeah.
Really? Right? Yeah, so she's there as one of the main nurses in the ward who helps with all of the emergency trauma and all of the horrific shit in the hospital. That's just her job. And so she recognizes this 14-year-old girl
is... who has no identification whatsoever except for a diary that she has on her in a bag.
Right, a diary in a bag. Otherwise, she's a complete Jane Doe. And Naomi Watts knows nothing about her other than they just delivered her baby. And now the baby's going to be the ward of the state. Yeah, because mom is dead. And now, interestingly enough, we move from there to the uncle, right? Naomi Watts meets her family.
Yes.
And she hands him the diary and is like, you speak Russian. Maybe you can figure out what this is, right? And he's a crusty old bastard.
Yeah, and he makes a joke about stealing things from dead people.
And yeah, do you know your daughter steals from dead people? Yeah, uh-huh. So it's really cool, though, because we're introduced to this guy who clearly, okay, supposedly this is modern contemporary London that we're in the city. Here's a guy who clearly he's an old, stodgy Russian. So he's going to have his old sort of, superstitions.
Yeah.
Things like that, folklore.
He has his ways.
Yeah. He very much has his ways.
He has his quirks.
And we see that clearly. But once again, I love the way that it's depicted because it's one of those things that you're like, okay, it's very natural that this guy would have these very limited views on certain people in the world. But by the same token, you got to figure out how to live with a bastard like that. And we see that, yeah, his views may be limited, but he still has this moral perspective, this viewpoint that fundamentally makes him a decent guy.
Right.
Even though he's a bit of a bigot and says some terrible things sometimes, he's still at his core intentionally trying to do the right thing most of the time.
Yes.
So once again, interesting characters in sort of interesting moral dilemmas that we don't really see very often in movies. So, especially mafia movies, you know.
And so then we're introduced to Vigo and fucking Vincent Castle, who, goddamn.
Everything delight. He's in. I love Vincent Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Everything this guy is in. You want to talk about another actor who consistently delivers... Okay, maybe he delivers a particular type of character, but he's so authentic in what he does that the emotional switches that he has, the way he gets upset, the way that you see the alcohol influencing him, All of those things are completely transparent in the performance and, once again, feel incredibly authentic rather than the artifice that your average actor would put on. This guy is just fantastic. I love watching him act.
And he is absolutely lights out, not only in this, but again, everything that I have ever seen him in. He is always a welcome delight.
Yeah. He brings energy. He's got this sort of joie de vivre, shall we say, where he's vibrant. He enjoys
and he's the such role. And he very often just plays a swarthy fucking bastard. Just a real greaseball.
He's played good guys, he's played bad guys, but essentially that overall energy that he brings is just, I mean, it's delightful. He's one of those actors that when you see him, you're like, okay, good.
Yep.
You know, we're on the right track with this movie. Well, and to see him play opposite Viggo, where,
astounding.
Yeah, because Viggo is the stoic. He's controlling his emotions. He doesn't say much about anything. I don't know. Kind of stuff. And when Viggo is persuasive, he's always in close to the person. Come on. You don't want to do that, do you? Nah, don't worry about it. You know, let it go. Just muttering in the guy's ear. Just keeping the control low, calm, all the time. And then there's...
And very often trying to keep Vincent Castle's character out of trouble.
I was just going to say, and there's Vincent getting weepy, getting violent, going, ah, fuck you, bitch! You know, just immediately, just the kind of out of control, spoiled character that you would expect from someone who basically is the son of the mafia don in the local area.
Yep. You know, who is introduced because Naomi Watts finds a bookmark in this diary from
card.
Yeah, the Trans-Siberian restaurant.
Yeah.
So she has this diary because her uncle refuses to translate it because he already kind of knows what it is.
Yeah, he glances through the diary and says, look,
I'm not translating
take this. My word for it. There's evil in this book and you don't want to know about it. And I'm not going to help you learn about it. You need to get rid of this book and just forget about it. And of course, Naomi Watts is like, but... This book comes from the mother of that infant that is now an orphan in my ward, and call it Florence Nightingale syndrome, call it single mom syndrome, whatever it is.
Well, because they've already introduced that she's lost a child previously. So
yes, exactly.
Previous emotional, man, previous emotional horrible, trauma established.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, and the way they establish it, once again, the uncle says something casually, carelessly, because he can be a complete bastard. And he's like, what? I'm just saying the truth. And it's like, okay, now we've got the whole family dynamic in the space of a minute. You know?
Exactly, because in as much as I don't like to promote racism, it does go along exactly with who this character is. He says something about how... he ran away because black men always run away.
Yeah.
And even the mother's like, step on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
And he takes that as, oh, I should up this one more, and says, mixing race isn't right. That's why your baby died inside of you.
Ugh. Yeah. And it's so brutal and careless, callous, heartless. Yes. And it tells you immediately because, of course... Both women are immediately offended, as well they should be.
Yes.
Whereas the uncle, stubborn as a mule as he is like, what? I'm just saying something everybody knows.
And you pointed out, she takes away his vodka and says, you're just like him, because that must be her dead husband's brother.
Yeah.
So he says, you're just like him, drunken, stupid fucking Russians. And he immediately just picks up the glass of wine in front of him.
Yeah, and just starts drinking the wine.
Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. But it, once again, it establishes so much in the space of just a few seconds, a few lines.
And again, that's an old school filmmaker that says, you know, like, no, I'm not going to water this down. This old Russian man would absolutely be a racist.
Well, and here's the other thing I'm going to say about the whole racism aspect is... We don't dwell on it at all. So it's not like a Tarantino scene with that whole Pulp Fiction thing, mm-hmm. you know, where he's just saying that whole storage thing. I'm not going to get into it. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. But you literally say that line like 10 or 15 times. Are you fucking serious? You know?
That is
You're just overly driving it home.
That is a good amount of the reason that I steer away from Tarantino films a lot.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I've never heard anyone give them an excuse to say the N-word more.
Yeah. Yeah, because there are some moments where I'll be like, as a matter of characterization or something like that, okay, fine, I can run with it. But when you're doing a scene like that, and you specifically have the director of the movie playing the character who's saying one of the most offensive lines over and over and over again, I'm sorry, Quentin, you're just jerking off mm-hmm. for the camera, and I don't appreciate it.
It's just, I can.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, okay, so that's enough of a rant about Tarantino. We could spend hours on that fucker. But Eastern Actually, Promises.
I did just watch From Dusk Till Dawn earlier today, as I was telling you. And it's weird how much stuff Robert Rodriguez put in with him looking at feet.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of Tarantino being into foot stuff in there, and it's very funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, what was her name? You know, the hottie in the vampire.
Oh, Salma Hayek?
Salma Hayek said that in that moment where the wine or champagne or whatever is running
down her leg into his mouth.
Yeah. He told her specifically, I want you watching me, looking at me while I do this, while they're taking the scene. Right? So Quentin's literally telling the actress, watch me. I want you locked eyes with me. I mean, if that isn't a fetishist having absolute control over his fantasy. You know what I mean? Anyway, so...
What a weird, gross dude.
Yeah.
Who makes very overrated movies. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know who doesn't? David Cronenberg.
Now, yeah, so...
Yeah, look at that transition, fuck faces.
Lean dialogue. There's no excessive monologues that are in there. There's no self-indulgent character work that's in there. You don't spend time with any character longer than is absolutely necessary to understand that they are either a threat or being threatened or are somehow trying to extricate themselves from some sort of threat. You know, it's one of those three. It's really fucking intense.
See, because I think we got to where Naomi Watts shows up at the Russian restaurant, the Trans-Siberian restaurant.
Yeah.
And meets the old man, who just seems like a very kindly old man.
He's making his borscht.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
For a big party. And is immediately interested when she starts bringing up... a certain girl's name and a diary that may or may not exist.
Oh, well, what's beautiful is that as the old man, he's like, or as the owner of the restaurant, initially he's like, well, I don't know, maybe she came in, maybe she had this borscht. Here, try this borscht. Isn't this fucking good?
Just wow. Like your papa used to make, right? I'm an old Russian man, too. You can trust me.
Yeah, exactly. Then he basically tells her what her name would be in Russian, which is interesting. Anna Ivanova or something like that. And then she's like, oh, well, yeah, but this girl, she was 14 years old. There was this baby. And he's like, oh, there's a baby. And as it progresses, by the end of the scene, he's like, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you bring me the diary? Why don't you come here, you know, 7 o'clock and, give me the diary. I'll see if I can find the family and I'll reach out to the family. So by the end of the scene...
And the last thing he asks her, so do you always work at this specific hospital?
Yeah.
Always?
That's your regular thing?
Good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So who is creepy as fuck? This old guy who starts out just, oh, I'm just a humble restaurateur. By the end of it, it's like, why did he ask where I work? And
if
why?
I always work there.
Yeah, uh-huh. And why does he want me to bring the diary? Is that weird? Is that... Huh, okay. So, once again, Naomi Watts, wily character that she is, instead of bringing the diary, photocopies every page from the diary and brings him the photocopies.
Yep.
So he's able to flip through and see what's in the diary while he's talking to her.
And on the spot makes up the, oh, I've broken my own rule today. I've drank vodka. I'm going to need a clear head to do this. I can't do this right now. Oh, where
give me
do,
a couple
where,
days.
Where do you live? I'll bring it to your home.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Now, okay. So we've been jumping around and playing with this relationship, this cat and mouse game between Naomi Watts trying to figure out what's going on and the Russian mobster guy. Now, cut back to Vigo. Vigo has been managing basically, okay, Vincent Castle is captain. He's the son of the old guy that is convincing Naomi Watts to give him the diary, right?
Yeah.
So
it's easy to think of, for listeners who haven't seen it, it's easy to think of the old man as the king, Vincent Castle as the prince.
Prince, and yes, perfect.
Vigo
yeah.
as the prince's underling. The
right,
prince's driver.
Like the sheriff, right? Prince's sheriff or something like that. So enforcer, driver, enforcer, go-to man, whatever. He looks fucking great. He's got tattoos.
Oh, God.
God, he's awesome. So
fucking crisp-ass black suits and his sunglasses.
His hair slicked back and just those cheekbones with the sunglasses. You're like, this guy has killed several people in his life and will probably kill several more before his life ends.
Yep.
Right? And his life will end violently.
Oh,
there is no,
absolutely no
yeah,
question.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's no sleeping softly in your bed, you know, in your 80s. No, no, no. Someone's going to rip his head off and send it somewhere as a message, you know.
Yes.
That's how he will die. But he seems to have accepted that.
Yep.
Seems perfectly fine with his place there. So, okay. We get examples of Vincent, off the rails a little bit. They visit this local whorehouse that's under their control. And clue.
The first time that he gets out of hand is when they go to the Turkish guy's place and they open the freezer and he's shouting at the dead guy in the freezer.
Yeah.
And even the old Turkish guy's like, have some respect for the dead. And he's just getting loud and out of hand. This guy spitting on the body.
Yeah. Great.
That's the first sign that he doesn't have control of his emotion, because he's never had to. Because he's been allowed to be just as wild and violent as he has ever wanted to be under the protection of his father.
Yeah, and Vigo. And Vigo, because Vigo's there to always be like, calm down, it's not that big of a deal, I'll take care of it, you know, that sort of thing. And
when they're hucking the body in the fucking river.
Uh-huh.
They bring it down to, like, this weird little alleyway that jettisons down into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And Vincent Castle, who clearly has not gotten rid of a body, says, well, don't we want to weight it down?
Yeah.
And Vigo just calmly says, no, it'll float out here, it'll sink, and it'll sink past the barrier from where we need it to go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry about
it. The tide will take it out.
This is the best place to bury a body.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And he's right, because we see the body all bundled up, start to drift out, and it gets about 5-10 feet off the dock, and it just gone.
In a great shot that, again, it's one of those little Cronenberg touches that I don't think an established filmmaker would have bothered to show that.
Yeah.
They'd have just shown the body float off.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually shows it in a still
in
shot.
In real time.
Yeah. Just go down and sink and start floating under. It's fucking incredible. Goddamn David Cronenberg. So they've gotten rid of this body.
And we've also established now the location for our climactic scene at the end. Let's not forget glorious script structure. How does Vigo figure out where he's going to go? Because he taught this guy.
This is where you get rid of bodies.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So anyway, without skipping ahead too much, so they get they clean up the body, get rid of it, and then they go celebrate by going to the whorehouse.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Well,
is that right? Or was
that
there a meeting?
That is where
there?
They show up drunk as fuck.
Yeah.
At the restaurant as Naomi Watts is leaving after the whole I'll bring it to your home ordeal. That is all the same sequence.
You know,
all four of our main characters shown what they're doing intertwined in the same basic location in two different scenarios for the same sequence.
Yeah.
That's filmmaking.
Yeah. And
that's story structure.
No, well, I'm definitely, I had forgotten about that. And yeah, pointing that out, there are multiple scenes where we have Naomi Watts run into Vigo or one of the other characters and have just a brief interaction, but it doesn't feel coincidental or not too coincidental in the context of the overall story, you know, in terms of the timing of how these people might meet
mm-hmm.
or things like that. So, so once again, there's not a lot of wasted energy in this movie at all. There's, if anything, there's one sequence where a woman at the restaurant is being serenaded by a guy, and maybe in, short attention span theater, some people might think that that carried on a little bit too long, but I mean, for me, that scene just, I love dwelling in those moments because here is the culture, the family environment that reinforces, yeah, okay, these may be bad guys, but here is this pretense mm-hmm. of civility and society that they're keeping and they're maintaining.
But also all of this large celebration and all this family is funded by blood money.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All it's not borscht that brought these people together.
No, all of this luxury and all of this family togetherness mm-hmm. brought to you by some of the most horrible crimes you've ever heard of.
Yeah, exactly. And oh, by the way, here's Vincent and Vigo doing some more of that nefarious shit just to remind you that this is a criminal organization here. So, one of the interesting things, though, they visit this whorehouse that's managed by the Russian mob, and Vigo gets told to pick one to let's say perform in front of his captain, and he does. But the interesting thing is at the end of it all, Vigo's talking to her and he asks her, what's your family name, what's the town you're from, and then he gives her cash and says, stay alive a little bit longer. You understand me? And gives her this card that has a saint. It's one of those Russian Orthodox saints. So I don't know who the saint is, but I would be willing to put money that it's some saint of perseverance or, you know, some sort of something. There's a person looking over you. That kind of comfort that he gives her, right? And I spend so much time dwelling on that because if you're not paying attention, about 10 or 15 minutes later, there's a conversation where days later, Vincent is telling Vigo, hey, the cops hit that, remember that place where we got laid? The cops hit that place. They found that girl. They asked for her by name, pulled her out of there, and they shut down the whole thing. Now, why would they go and do that and bug our business?
And specifically, he asks, what right do they have to take our women?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That is the mindset that these guys are in because
they're full on property.
They do not live in society.
Yeah.
At all.
Well, Vigo even has a line where Naomi Watts questions him about
why are you doing
know
what you're doing?
About this situation and just not have any reaction to it, right? And he says something like, slaves give birth to slaves. And it's just so matter of fact.
Flat.
Yeah. 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 This is just how it is. She was a slave. She gave birth to a slave baby. I have no concerns about them. They were slaves.
Because Naomi Watts has worked out a deal with them to where because the old man comes to the hospital.
Oh, dude. All right. So before we've been jumping around a bit. So basically, that's the whole setup, though, is that within the diary, there is actual evidence. And the old man, the king mobster guy, has read the diary. He knows He is implicated now in the rape of this 14-year-old girl, and he actually is the father of this infant that Naomi Watts is now looking to ultimately adopt and become a surrogate mother for.
Yes.
Yeah, care for. So, so that is the big...
But she doesn't know that. She finds that out when she gets home after this scene.
Yeah.
But it's fucking chilling because the old man just walks into the nursery ward where he is not supposed to be.
Yeah.
And basically she tells him, you're not allowed to be here. And he says, very nicely, shut your mouth.
Yeah. Well, he basically says
what
something
I have
like,
to say.
Yeah. There are open doors everywhere or something like that. And then he starts going, so
there are
is
things
this
in
the
that
baby?
Book that implicate my son.
Mm-hmm.
Again, throwing his son under the bus because, and we'll get to this later.
Yeah.
But throwing his son under the bus saying there are things about my son in that book. Some of them are illegal. So I now have the address for this woman's family and back in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she belongs is in Russia. So why don't you just give me the baby right now?
Yeah, give me the baby. I'll make sure the baby gets back to the family in Russia because that's where the baby should be, is with family, right? And you can give me the diary in exchange for my help of you giving me the baby and giving me the diary, and then just be quiet about everything and everything will be fine. Would you do that favor for me?
And again, it's the last line before he leaves that it's just sinister as shit. Because he says, all right, well, at least I know where, now, or at least now I know where you are. Or you know where I am.
And I know where you
and
are.
And I know exactly where you are.
Whoo! And when someone like that says something like that to you?
Because I think that's the first indication that she has that, oh, fuck. This guy is...
I think that's the first real confirmation.
Very clear. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the first real confirmation that she's like, okay, my uncle's right. These people are all mafia people. What can I do? And the interesting thing is that, once again, it's more her maternal instinct that's kicking in rather than her own self-preservation, because she is consistently thinking about this infant.
Mm-hmm.
And protecting this infant, because it literally, it's innocent life.
Yeah, because she tells the mob boss in that hospital, I don't care what he's done. My only concern is for this baby now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, the old man is like, well, isn't that noble? So why don't I just take the baby off your hands as well?
Yeah.
With this, I mean.
No? Okay. Well, I'm not going to make a scene here, but I know where you are.
Yeah.
At all times, I know where you are.
Oh, man. So they do this creepy fucking exchange setup thing. The uncle and the mom and Naomi Watts are there.
Where Viggo looks like the most sinister man in the world.
Yeah. And he comes up and he sits down at the table just like he is a wraith or a specter from hell. Just like, so we're here to do a transaction, are we?
And flat out tells her, oh, a public place with lots of people around. Wise. And looks at her mother and uncle and says, oh, and you brought bodyguards.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Also wise.
But then uncle stands up to him and is like, oh, you filth, you scum.
When I was in the KGB, we knew what to do with you scum. And Viggo looks right at him and goes, yeah, what'd you do there?
Yeah.
And sneers at him and laughs.
Yeah, exactly. What did you do
there? I can tell looking at you, you weren't motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. And once again, brilliant fucking writing. They establish early on in an earlier scene where the uncle is trying to warn Naomi Watts, hey, look, you don't want to be around these guys. He says there, when I was in the KGB.
But they do it with a comedic touch. Which
they
is brilliant.
Do it. It's comedic, but it's authentic because Naomi Watts and her mom both question him at the same time. Were you actually in the KGB? And he humbly admits, I was in the auxiliary. I was in the reserves.
Yeah.
So,
because he says, well, back when I was in the KGB, Naomi Watts just yells, you weren't in the fucking KGB.
Yeah, calls him on it immediately.
Yeah.
But then her mom, of course, being far more conciliatory and all of that, is like, were you really? And he's like, oh, it's auxiliary. So we have this nice little, I mean, first of all, it's great that the little bit of humor is there, not only because it's authentic, but because it now breaks up a tense scene, mm-hmm. and we can move to another scene, which we do in that whole structure. But now we know later that when he confronts Vigo, he's bluffing, but Vigo doesn't give a fuck one way or another. Calls it immediately, he right on the face. Stonewalls
him right away.
Right on the face of it, right? Yeah, okay. All right, you were in the KGB. Okay.
And taking that, like, naturally comedic scene and then turning it into something that's terrifying. Fucking chilling.
Yeah.
That is good directing.
Oh, man. And, once again, acting, the commitment of the actors, the talent level that you had with those actors, you know?
Mm-hmm.
God, so many great things.
Naomi Watts follows him outside after she says, you know, well, now give me the address. He says, see, I don't know what you're talking about.
And I was just going to say, that's the bit. She gives Vigo the diary. Vigo's like, okay, great, good idea, thank you. He moves to leave, and she's like, wait a minute, where's the address for the family back in Russia? And Vigo's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Because he probably was never told in the first place, because the old bastard, of course, only wants the diary,
mm-hmm.
right? And the old bastard, okay, so Vigo walks out.
Yeah, and he's not a made guy yet. He doesn't get to know the secrets of why it's go pick this up.
Exactly. And he constantly says, and I think even in this scene, he says, I'm just a driver.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm a driver. I don't know, you know? But
there's the part where she follows him outside and he effectively tells her very flatly, go back inside. You don't belong near people like me. You belong in there with nice people.
Yeah.
Not by people like me.
Great line.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. And uncle comes out and confronts him.
Spits right in his fucking face.
Spits in his face. Now, you want to talk about a demonstration of restraint, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know Vigo could destroy that old man in a second if he wanted to, but he just makes that death sign, yeah. Right?
He takes his index and middle finger, and it's almost like a snake bite pattern right on his throat, and then points at the old man. It's one of those things, if you see somebody who looks like Vigo as a Russian gangster do that, that's, oh, you're dead.
You know what? I think I'm going to go home, pack up all my shit, leave the city, move somewhere else as quickly as possible. You know, try and stay away from any transit areas that are near the Russian enclave. No, I think I'll try and leave from the other side of town. You know, something like that, because you're already a fucking dead man. You're a dead man. The best hope that you have is that you can get a lead start on your run. Yeah, and that they kill you quickly. Yeah.
And don't kill all of your family.
Well, you know, and that's the other thing is King Mob Guy gets the diary. And says, well, the uncle read it, so he has to die.
Mm-hmm.
Vigo's like, oh, yeah, okay. Now, Naomi Watts gets a pass because she can't read Russian. She's made it clear she doesn't know what the fuck is in the diary, what's going on. So King Mob Guy is like, she gets a pass.
Mm-hmm.
The mom never even comes up as a question, but it's this uncle. So Vigo's like, okay, all right, well, yes, sir. I'll take care of it.
But in a very good scene that opens with him sitting at a table at this restaurant reading the diary. Mm-hmm. So when the old man comes out, Vigo already knows all this shit about him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And once again, these are all little things that the first time through watching this movie, you're like, yeah, okay. Yeah, well, wouldn't you take a look at the diary if it was just there,
mm-hmm.
you know? Wouldn't you be curious? Of course you would, right? But once everything tallies up by the end of the movie, you're suddenly like, oh, there's actually another layer of something happening here. It's not just Vigo's learning about the crimes of the boss. Mm-hmm. You know, there's intention for why he's doing what he's doing, which is fucking great. So he gets the order to kill the uncle, and there are very few times when I like seeing a scene where it's ambiguous, right? We see the uncle go into a room or into a house, building, whatever. And there's Vigo in the car and he gets out. And we're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, he's dead.
And the only thing that we know about the uncle in subsequent scenes is he's disappeared. Nobody's heard anything. Nobody knows what's happened. So immediately the assumption is, oh, fuck.
In point of order, like, the mother says, well, he did spit in that awful man's face.
And again, with Naomi Watts, by this time she's had enough of those random encounters with Vigo and with the whole mafia thing that she's kind of sort of intuitively got this understanding that Vigo might be one of those guys who's okay. Maybe. Wishful thinking.
As okay as this kind of person could be.
Well, she literally says, well, I don't think that he's just a driver. I don't think that he would be violent like that. To which the mom is like, seriously, are you kidding? Yeah. Right?
You know who these guys are?
Yeah. Yeah, completely. But, you know, again, it's this whole question of, you know, the different ideologies and the different desires, you know? Like, she's still very much a hopeful character. Throughout everything.
Because there is that scene when the uncle is talking about how, well, I have a friend from the Ukraine who knows how to get a gun from the war in Afghanistan. The mother's like, we're not these people. We're regular people. We're not part of this world.
Yeah, we're not getting a gun. We're not going to even pretend that we are prepared for this kind of a thing.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely which, not.
And once again, you know, these are sensible, realistic conversations. You know, there's none of this. Well, I've lived in this house for 20 years and nobody's going to push me. Well, you've already been pushed.
Yes.
You know, you really have been recognized. Okay.
By so, people you do not want recognizing you.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. So so basically, uncle's disappeared. The whole situation with the diary is now, well, what's happening with the baby and trying to make sure that the baby itself is going to be protected somehow. And Naomi is trying to figure that out. And even Vigo at one point says to her, you know what? Why don't you just take care of the kid? Why don't you do that?
Yeah, right? I have this address. It's this town outside of here.
Oh, that's right. I've been there. He brings her the address. He later brings her the address of the family in Russia, yeah. And he's like, no, this...
It's not a good place for
a kid.
For a kid, especially a little girl. Knowing that is where they traffic these fucking girls from. Yeah. Sending her right back into the pipeline.
Fucking A right. I didn't even think of that, but you're absolutely right. That's what he's telling her.
Yes,
yeah, that is up. What he's telling her. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
But meanwhile, Vincent Castle has acquired a truck full of wine.
Yeah.
From France that's old as fuck.
But and it also shows they traffic in everything.
Yeah, they're gangsters.
Yeah, they are full-on gangsters. Doesn't matter what it is, if they can make a buck off it, because he was like, this sells for $60 a bottle, I get it for $10 a case.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And all this little shit, this is just for, like, Papa and his friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this isn't even the big-time stuff.
This is just shit that I got.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great, because there he is, he's bragging and all of that. Vigo's like, oh yeah, where'd you get it? And Vincent's like, nope, you're not at that level yet. Yep. Nope, fuck you.
It came from where you don't ask.
Yeah. Exactly. So, but
that's also the scene where the old man shows up wondering what happened to the very first Russian gangster that we saw get his throat slit. Says, you know what?
Turns out it's an assassination that was not sanctioned by the old man.
No.
So the old man is like, wait a minute, who's dead? And that guy was a made guy, and you killed him.
Because he tries to lie about it. Vincent tries to get out of it, and Papa, what are you talking about? In a great acting performance of acting like he is lying, it's a very good performance. He's the worst liar of all time.
Well, it's the boy being confronted by the father and always folding in front of the dominant father. I mean, once again, the structures of the scenes are all elemental. They make wonderful sense.
They've been around for hundreds of years. The father emasculates the son, so the son emasculates his underling. Because every time he is abused by his father, he goes on to try and abuse Viggo.
Whenever he's given an order, he immediately has Viggo do it.
Yep.
Yeah. Which, once again, great dynamics. All of that stuff works. But
this is where that relationship finally breaks. Because Viggo stands up and goes, "No, we did it. There's no use in lying about it. We did it, and here's why we did it. Don't worry, boss. We took care of it the right way."
That's right, because Viggo makes it clear. Well, and Viggo makes it clear as the participant in hiding the body. Look, this guy was saying insulting shit about your son, things I don't even want to say publicly, but he was saying this shit. So we cannot have let him go running his mouth. You have to understand that this was a matter of honor. We did this the correct way.
I didn't tell you because Vincent's my captain. You never speak above your
captain. And yeah, I can't betray my captain. So I can't. Yeah, you can't speak above your captain. This is why I didn't tell you. I had to be loyal. Trying to
appeal to that sense of honor among these gangsters. But you know what?
Fucking brilliant, because it works. And the old man is like, well, the old man sees, okay, let's just go ahead and acknowledge that the old man knows he's being played with this flattering dialogue and this sort of stuff from Viggo, and that, okay, you're fine to discipline your son, but you have to understand that what we did was correct, so don't discipline him too much. In fact, you know, everything's cool, okay? Just leave it like that.
And that's
even
also
if he understands he's being played, he still understands he's being played the right way. Because Viggo's talking about the tradition and the honor and the respect and all of that sort of thing.
Also, where it's brought up that was it Stoika, the guy that's killed.
Mm-hmm.
He has brothers.
Yeah.
So what do you want me to tell them? And Viggo confidently says, "He doesn't have to worry because he has me."
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. I have the prince's back.
And the king literally says, "Okay, then it's your problem."
Yep.
And walks away.
Uh-huh.
Fucking wow. You know, you want to talk about Game of Thrones kind of dialogue. You know, I mean, this, and of course, this is before we're dealing with all of that shit, right? But these are the dynamics here, is you have to pay attention to. There is the flat, overt dialogue, absolutely. But there is subtext for everything that's happening here. There's subtext for all of that strangeness that builds this world and makes it authentic, you know? Without these actors being committed to that subtext, the lines themselves could just be squandered into B-movie mafia bullshit. You know?
And the other reason that we kind of know that he knows that he's being played is a later scene where they're at the party. He gets called outside to talk to the Turkish guy who owned the
barbershop. Yeah. Yeah.
And he says, this is after his nephew's throat is slit after a soccer game in broad daylight.
Right.
And he says, "I had to tell them."
Mm-hmm.
"I had to tell them it was Vincent Castle. But I'm telling you because I fear you more than I fear them."
Right.
And he flat out asks him, "So do they know where he is? Do they know what he looks like?"
Mm-hmm.
"No?" Mm-hmm. "Okay. Never do business with anyone in my family without telling me ever again."
Yeah. Yeah. Great scene.
And that's also where we set up that he kind of knows, because after this, they put Viggo up for full membership.
Dude. This scene is really great because, once again, we see the subterfuge and the tactics, and we begin to find out, okay, so him getting made involves having these tattoos applied to his body that designate him and his rank, within the mob. So he goes ahead, gets these tattoos, but that very same barbershop guy who's now had his son killed, right? He knows he can't kill Vincent. He can't kill the prince. But he also knows that those guys, because of the shenanigans and everything, are responsible for getting his son killed. So Vigo has to be the one to be executed, effectively in this whole sort of, you know, revenge, revenge, revenge cycle. And the barber who applied the tattoos to Vigo himself sends the assassins after Vigo saying, you'll know him by the tattoos. Fuck, man. It's just...
In that whole scene of his initiation into the Russian mob.
Where he renounces his mother and just father.
Yeah. Sitting in a chair. The lighting on this is fucking fantastic.
Oh, yeah, also. Yeah.
Just the filmmaking here is incredible.
Yeah.
Of him sitting in a chair just in his underpants covered in Russian prison tattoos.
Yeah, and they're reading his tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, and the interesting thing is that I recognized that they reference tattoos, which obviously they would have seen at some point before he sat down or something like that. But it's the St. Petersburg tattoos on his back. They specifically reference those when they're talking about his history in terms of where he was in the mafia. How did he get those particular things? Because they had such a specific meaning. And he's... tells them it's because he was in solitary confinement for so long, they couldn't break him. They called him the stump or yes. Something like that, right? And so he's got this whole fucking prison reputation story that's easily verifiable. You know these guys will do their research and all of that sort of shit. And he gets made. Once again, talking about the mob culture and everything, just these tattoos... You see something like that with the Yakuza, but you see in this movie just how you see so directly how it's used, you know? I don't really recall Yakuza movies where they have the tattoos being read like that, you know? And so this is just something that's really interesting. Everybody gives their approval. The barber puts the tattoos on him. He's been brought.
Oh, that's
into
not
the
Turkish barber.
Yeah.
That, no, it's not. It's that old Russian dude with a ponytail. He rules.
Is he the same one who goes with him to the spa?
No.
That's the Turkish barber.
Yeah, that's the Turkish barber. The guy
who goes with him to the spa.
Yeah, the guy that gives him the tattoos is the old Russian dude with the ponytail.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. Okay, that's my eyes and my light. I'm sorry. So, yeah, so he gets fucking made, though.
And that is the first time after, and there's another scene in there, I forget what it is. The first time that we see Vigo with his brand new made man tattoos is the first, is his betrayal.
Yeah.
And I was pointing out.
He immediately gets betrayed.
This is what I wanted to point out is nothing fucking means anything to these people. Any of these rituals that they hold sacred, family bonds that they say that they hold sacred, and this is not so unlike real life, none of that means a fucking thing to them.
Yeah.
Not a goddamn thing.
Yeah, for all of the pretense, for all of the honor, all of the respect. Vigo, we're elevating you. We're going to put these stars on your chest. Vigo, come to this spa, hang out with me, where I have these assassins, and they're going to use those self-same stars to identify you to kill you.
Yeah.
We literally marked you for death.
This thing that is this time-honored tradition, he's willing to tarnish to not have his son killed.
Well.
And to set up this guy instead, because he's just the driver.
Yeah, exactly. And when you consider... the time-honored tradition intentionally is supposed to be that this guy is essentially supposed to be made, essentially untouchable kind of a guy, and he is touchable immediately. And let's just quit beating around the bush. The naked fight in the spa. Oh, you man. Will never get Matthew McConaughey or what's his fuck? Matt Damon.
Tom Cruise ain't doing this shit.
You're not getting any of the top leads to actually do a full-on fight. And people might say, oh, Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool. He was in full fucking body makeup when he was doing that quote-unquote nude fight. Viggo Mortensen, no joke, buck naked, fighting two guys in a spa, and he wins. Beats the shit out of them. Holy shit, what an incredible fight.
In a bloodbath. In a scene that is just very well executed action, yeah. Also.
Yeah, choreography works, it's plausible. Viggo takes hits, he gets cut. I mean, it is...
No score.
It's an authentic fight. Yeah, no soundtrack. None of the that you'd get from Mission Impossible or something like that. So,
hold on 1 minute.
Yeah.
I need to make... Oh, I'm going to be honest with you, Brad. Not sure how to edit this one together.
Well, you know.
Sometimes, twice in a row on this show, we have to take raccoon breaks.
Yeah, well, you know, it's... not every day that you get a little furry visitor coming into the studio and saying, hello, do you have any crackers?
Yeah.
I might, but...
no, but for real, you got any crackers?
Yeah. No, but really.
Give me the crackers. Give me those fucking crackers.
So, anyway, so where were we?
I believe we were in naked sauna fight.
Yeah, exactly. So Viggo, gets his tattoos. The assassins come to the spa and they're told, kill the guy with the new tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And they come at Viggo, and his combat training is so good and he's in such good fucking shape that he's able to beat two fully clothed men with carpenter's knives, basically. Mm-hmm. Those hook knives that are really like for pulling up rugs or whatever. But nasty weapons. He gets all cut up, but he's still able to kill both of them quite viciously.
In a very violent fashion.
Yeah, and once again, he is 100% totally nude doing the fight. I don't name another actor who would do that.
And during the initial struggle, we were mentioning, the action scenes carry on for a few seconds. It's not that quick-cut bullshit.
Yeah.
You see vicious violence on screen.
Yeah.
And it's pretty goddamn incredible. And then when he's crawling away, when you think that he's made it, and the second goon comes back to life, that's all one shot.
Yeah.
That is a very good man comes to life, grabs Viggo by the throat. They struggle with a knife. Viggo grabs a knife by the blade and shoves it in his eyeball, and he bleeds out on the floor.
And one I mean, shot. Dude, that shot where he brings the blade around and gets him in the eye looks so fucking real. And the blood just starts pouring out. You're like, oh, fuck.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. And Viggo, he's such a badass, even though he's been cut up on his front, on his back, on his arm, on his leg. He's on still his
hand.
On his hand.
And been just had the shit beaten out of him also. Not just cuts.
Yeah.
He has taken blows.
Yeah. Pummeled, tossed around, all of that stuff. Completely naked. Let's just not forget that. And then he goes to the hospital. Naomi Watts sees him all beat to shit and is like, oh, man. What'd you do to my uncle?
Yeah, also, my uncle's been missing for a few days. You wouldn't know anything about that, would you?
Uh-huh. And at that point, Viggo breaks down his wall just enough to let her know, don't worry about your uncle, he's okay. Yeah, I was told that I had to kill him, but I talked to him Russian to Russian. And he understood exile.
He's old school. He understands situation.
Yeah. So he's alive. He's in Scotland. I'll give you the address later. Don't worry about it.
He's at a 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
Here's the name of it.
Yeah, he's doing fine. So Naomi Watts can say comfortably, okay, good. Comfortably let the mom know, but shut the fuck up. But just know that for the time being, this is a situation, right? So,
And that's when the policeman shows up, right after she leaves, is when the policeman shows up.
Yeah.
The policeman who had found the dead Russian before.
Yeah.
Because Viggo didn't successfully send that body out to sea. He sent it as a progress report, apparently.
Well, what was brilliant about it is, okay, Viggo understood that at some point that body was going to be found.
It would wash up. Yeah. It would make it past where the Russian believed that it needed to go, but he knew that it was going to wash up on a shore somewhere.
Yeah, and let's look at it from a criminal perspective, right? A body washes up, no identification, fingers cut off, head cut off, all of that sort of
thing.
Teeth
removed, yes.
Yeah. So, body's going to wash up. You're not going to know necessarily where the body even started when it got into the water, right? That's the whole deal. So, Viggo takes advantage of that and does the whole planting a note in the dead body specifically for the cops to find.
Yep.
So, this is a revelation. The clue about the Ukrainian girl, the last bit with revealing that the uncle's not dead, three tells, and then the cop shows up to get his police report update.
Mm-hmm.
And now the big twist is Viggo's been so fucking deep cover this whole time that even though he's a full-on Russian mafia guy cutting fingers off of people and killing people, being capable of all of this shit, he's actually a good guy.
And we're told that even the Russian consulate wants him taken off of the case because of his actions.
Yeah. Yeah, because of this most recent violent act and other violent acts attributed to you. We want you off the case.
Yes.
And Viggo says, hey, I got the stars. I'm made. You're never going to have a better opportunity or a better operative. Fuck you, I'm still in. And the cop is fuck.
And I'm going to become the boss.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the head of the London mob.
Branch of the Russian mob.
Yes.
Yeah. And he says, I'm gonna be able to take all of this over. You know, so I'm not going anywhere. Right? Now, circle back to reminder, all of this hinges on this girl and the old mobster guy. So the cop now has enough information between Viggo. He's probably got, at the very least, dialogue about the diary. The cop knows that there's a diary that exists at some point or did exist, that there was a witness. The 14-year-old girl, they've got a blood sample of her from the hospital itself.
Well, and the baby, yeah. They have the baby as just
and they've got the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they've got the blood trail for the mom and the baby already. They just need the old man. And the cop has enough evidence because of Viggo to go to the old King Mafia guy and say, look. And I, again, much respect to Cronenberg. We could have had a 5-minute, 10-minute scene of dialogue back and forth.
This is the one part that they kind of zip over.
They zip over the point simply because the old man has to give up his blood.
Yeah.
Now you can either do it down at the station forcibly or you can do it here at the restaurant. Is the whole dialogue we don't see. What we do see is the old man comes in and he's like, those savages, they shot me with probably the same needle they use for heroin junkies.
Yeah,
right?
and homosexuals.
And homosexuals, right. Again, the old prejudices are
yep.
just coming
washing
through.
Off the wound where they took the blood
with
vodka.
Because
he probably got, and I'm just quoting the movie, they probably gave him the queer disease.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now you notice, oh, okay, all right, I'm glad you said that because, go ahead.
Character progression. He went from the kindly old man to now that we know he's despicable, he's being outright despicable in front of our faces and saying things that we know, that you know will repulse an audience.
Absolutely. Well, he is the evil unmasked, unfettered, because he's comfortable in his home environment, mm-hmm. right? And he's offended that these police did these things to him. Now, here's one thing you and I have not really talked about in so far in this whole movie, and it is absolutely relevant, which is the guy who got killed, the shit that he was saying about the prince was that the prince is gay.
Yes. In Orthodox, or at least that is what Viggo presents.
Oh, well.
Whether or not that is true isn't, who knows.
Now, here's the thing. We don't have the actual overt confirmation, but there are elements all the way through that confirm that this is the case.
Yes.
Right? And once again, like fucking Vincent's acting is brilliant.
When he wants to watch Viggo have sex with
this
girl.
When he wants to watch Viggo have sex with that girl.
When they're reading the diary and it said that the Vincent Castle's character tried to rape me, but he couldn't, so he just beat me harder.
Right, exactly. And that was why the old man raped her, was because the son couldn't.
Yeah.
Right? So there's that. Then there's all of these little other subtle moments of acting in the relationship between Viggo and him that make you think, even though they probably never did anything physical in any way, their relationship is intimate and close enough to where you could kind of sort of see how one definitely protects the other. Viggo definitely protects Vincent from any sort of thing that could be misconstrued,
yes.
right? So when the dad says that line with the queer disease, they actually show Vincent reacting to that. Like, well, I'm definitely not going to tell mm-hmm. my dad anything one way or another, you know, but there's this sort of a moment where you can kind of see him saying, okay, further confirmation that I am a straight male, right? No matter what. That's what I am, right? And there's even, man, when they get to the last bit, the climactic part of the movie where Viggo stops him, if you notice the way Cronenberg sets up that shot, Viggo's holding Vincent like they're lovers, and he's comforting him. They're like spooning. As he's comforting him, saying that he did the right thing, give me the kid. No, you're good. You're going to be good. You and me are partners together. We're going to take down your dad. You know, all of that
is
literally him, like, whispering in his ear like a fucking lover. Right? Cut to, Vincent gives Viggo the kid. Viggo gives Naomi the kid. Vincent runs off because he's now convinced. Oh, okay, yeah, we're gonna do the right thing now, and I've got Viggo in my corner.
Because Viggo flat out tells him, you know, like, we don't kill babies.
Yeah,
this isn't what the code is all about. Your father's gone too far. It'll be us together.
And it's the perfect manipulation in that moment. It's just, oh, it's brilliant in so many levels. And then the next composition is him holding the baby with Naomi, and they're touching heads together, and it's like a union, husband, wife, child, you know, and like this almost a glowing scene, so tender.
This
right?
Something familiar amidst all this chaos, because we just watched a man almost huck a baby in a river in a duffel bag.
And now, here is hope. Here is Naomi Watts having her fulfillment, because now she's fully embracing that she's going to be caring for this child. And her and Viggo are accepting, like, the star-crossed lovers. Even though they've never even made love, they accept that in this moment, Vigo's act of kindness is going to be the last gesture that they're going to have together as any sort of couple. She's going to go and reunite with her uncle and her mom, and they will all be a collective family together. And Viggo's going to go off and pursue his ambition of becoming the fucking king
yes.
of the Russian mob. I mean, dude. And he does it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I thought about at the end of it, is just, yeah, he's a straight-up Whitey Bulger character.
Yeah.
He, Whitey Bulger, famously worked for the FBI for, like, what, 20 years? Yeah. While also running the biggest crime ring in Boston. Like,
running the biggest crime ring. Not just, like, a player or an informant, but full-on running.
Yes.
Committing. Yeah, because the last frame of the movie, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, but everybody knows the Whitey Bulger story.
The last frame of Eastern Promises is Vigo sitting at that table of that restaurant alone.
Mm-hmm.
The prince isn't there. It's just Vigo. So you know that he's the king now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Such a great fucking movie.
It is now, a
when we say we
film.
Watch bullshit, the in this case, I adore this movie. It is literally one of my all-time favorite movies. For me, the bullshit is this went up against No Country for Old Men, and No Country for Old Men fucking swept, and everybody was like, oh, it's such a good movie. Oh, the Coen brothers. Oh, it's so brilliant. That movie is garbage, okay? And it's shot well,
okay,
but it's
Brad.
Got plot points that are just ridiculously, overtly stupid. I don't know how it made it as far as it did. Eastern Promises should have cleaned up that whole year, and it's bullshit that it got screwed the way that it did.
And the reason that I, when I brought this to you, I had no idea that this was one of your favorite movies. Not a clue.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I had to say, yeah, Eastern Promises, and then in a separate text, it's the one with the naked Vigo fight.
And I was like,
yeah, man, I know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's what I was worried about, because I wanted to bring this, because when we talk about David Cronenberg,
mm-hmm.
you don't talk about Eastern Promises.
No, uh-uh.
You talk about fucking Scanners and Videodrome.
Well, for me, Dead Ringers. For me, Dead Ringers, I was like, holy shit, because here's Jeremy Irons playing twins.
Oh, man. Dead Ringers is a fucking amazing film.
It blew my... Just the two of them talking in frame, and he's like, just one more time, and then we'll kick. Yep, one more, and then we'll kick.
It's so fucking bleak.
Dude. He makes up all of the OBGYN equipment.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, this should be no problem for you. And it's this horrible thing with these blades on it. You're like, Jesus Christ, man.
But in terms of, like, what people really think of when you think of Cronenberg, like The Brood, when you think of that wicked body horror.
Yeah.
Dead Ringers is more, I think, almost along the lines of this, because there is some definite Cronenberg moments.
Yeah.
But you don't sit down, like I sat down and watched it and was like, oh, well, where was all the weird shit I was expecting? This is just depressing.
Well, that is true. That is true. Let's see now.
But Scanners, Existenz. I mean, even Rabid all the way back. Like, David Cronenberg is known for a very distinct style that's going to make you see things that you wish you hadn't.
Yeah. And then it's unsettling the way he just objectively presents it.
Yes.
You know? I think that's the thing. Like, even with Existenz, one of the things that I remember that I just love is they're talking about having these ports put into your body so that you can have these attachments and things. And the guy is like, well, aren't you worried about bacteria or something like that? And Jennifer Jason Leigh, she just opens her mouth, just smiles at him, opens her mouth. And the implication right there is, we already have all these holes in our bodies.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's bacteria, fine. Get the fuck out of here. And it's just this excellent example of not needing any dialogue, but just sort of furthering this perversion, like, what are you worried about? Who cares? You know, and when you think about the application and what they're talking about, I mean, dude, it's just...
And just the knowledge of film grammar and the show don't tell.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to get to there, is that there are all of these elements with Cronenberg where he trusts his audience. He doesn't, dumb down anything or overly explain something, because he trusts his script, he trusts his actors, and the guy is a genuine fucking filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, absolutely.
As proven by Eastern Promises.
Yeah, uh-huh. And several others that you have listed as well. I mean, The Fly, right?
Yeah, that's still super duper body horror. That's like one of the biggest, like, you want to see some Cronenberg shit? Go watch The Fly and Videodrome.
Yeah. Videodrome.
You're going to see some Cronenberg shit.
Yeah, exactly. Videodrome is really interesting for that sort of, techno-horror kind of obsession. But obsession, this is something that is a foundation with his movies. So every one of these movies deals with that, is authentic in its own way, and you need to go see them. So, what do you think? About ready to wrap it up?
Yeah. What do you get to plug?
Not a whole hell of a lot. I'm revamping some stuff. I figured out the HPV video stuff, so I'm going to start working on that. And hopefully we should have a full season ready to go by next year.
All right. And, and you? Pretty much just this horror vomit. Sometimes I'm on the old Twitch at horror_vomit_Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I'm around.
Okay.
This raccoon's getting real aggressive here.
Yeah, maybe they want some crackers.
Yeah, let's call it.
Let's go before he bites us and makes us rabid.
Yes, all right. Indeed.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye.
Bye. Holy.